Welcome, everybody, to episode 33 of 3U 3D, your weekly baseball podcast of goodness. And we're going to start it off with congratulations to podcaster Angelo Felicia. His Detroit Tigers making it all the way to the 2012 World Series. He actually predicted it at the start of the season on our blog, 3u3d.mlblogs.com. He predicted them to win the whole thing. So, Angelo, I'm going to give you some time to gloat for now. Go.
Thank you. Oh, well, I couldn't be more excited for the Tigers to be in the World Series. I mean, yeah, I guess you could say I predicted it, and it was a homer pick at first, but I really believe that we had a good team coming into the season. But I did not expect our pitching to do what they have been doing. As far as the starters go, they are just absolutely mowing people down. It wasn't just the four games against the Yankees. It was also the series against the A's. A little disappointed on the hitting side, but, you know, it is the playoffs. Pitching does take precedence. So I'm very excited to be in the World Series. I'm excited not to be playing the Cardinals because they seem to never die, but apparently they did. But I'm really looking forward to this series against the Giants. I think the Giants are going to give us a run for our money, but I think it's going to be a fun, entertaining series.
All right, we'll get into World Series predictions soon enough, but let's introduce the other Baseball Roundtable associates once again for this week. We're going to start off with Brian Boynton representing the American League West.
Hey, guys.
Over to the National League West, represented by Jeremy Dorn.
The world's newest, biggest Tigers fan.
And KP Kurt Peter representing the National League Central.
And supporting no one in this World Series.
And my name, Brian Mapes, representing the Eastern Divisions of Baseball. And a little bit of a tease, we have a special guest joining us later. One of the big stories from this week involving the San Diego Padres. If you've listened to every episode of the podcast, you can probably figure out who it'll be, but he will be on a little bit later in this podcast. But we have to start off, of course, with the World Series. 2,430 regular season games done, 31 postseason games done, and we are down to the Detroit Tigers and the San Francisco Giants. The Tigers, of course, looking for their first World Series championship since 1984. The year I was born, so I don't know. I'm not going to be born again, so I don't think it'll affect them winning the World Series this year. And the San Francisco Giants last winning the World Series just two seasons ago in 2010. The Tigers sweep the New York Yankees 4-0, while the Giants make a miraculous comeback, down 3-1 with Game 5 in St. Louis. Guys, what do you think was more impressive of a championship series victory? The Tigers sweep or the Giants coming back from 3-1? We'll start it off with Jeremy.
You might be surprised. I'm actually going to go with the Giants. I think that the Tigers sweep was thoroughly impressive. I mean, no matter how, you know, injured or terrible the Yankees were playing, whatever, it's still the Yankees. You know, it's the kings of the postseason, and they swept them, no problem. So, yeah, impressive. But, you know, coming back 3-1, I hate to say it, but, man, it was gritty. I mean, you got to win the game in St. Louis and then come back. I know you have home field advantage back in San Francisco, but you still have to win 3 games in a row against a team that hadn't lost more than 2 games in a row in over a month, I think. Yeah, I got to give them a hand for that.
Brian, over to you. What was more impressive, the Tigers sweep or the San Francisco comeback?
Well, I'm going to have to go with the San Francisco comeback just because at the time the Cardinals were really rolling. I didn't think anybody would be able to beat them. But you got to give the credit to the Tigers. I mean, that was only, what, the first time since 1961 that someone swept the Yankees in a series in which they didn't lead in the postseason. That in itself is pretty impressive, but like Jeremy said, the fact that they had to win in St. Louis to get it back to San Francisco was a feat of its own.
KP, over to you. What's more impressive to you, San Francisco's 2-game comeback for the second straight series or the Detroit sweep?
I feel like I'd be going with the trend the whole way, but I got to say the San Francisco comeback was more impressive. I think sweeping the Yankees is obviously not a joke. It's not like a small accomplishment. That's incredible because the Yankees have been good and are good, and they're just a team that you just don't sweep, and you don't beat them that many times in a row. But watching the Giants come back down 3-1 after being, I don't know, just kind of walked all over the first few games that they lost, it wasn't pretty. And they came back and saddled up and did what the Cardinals have done so much to everyone else last year and in a few of the series this year. So it was awesome to see a little payback, especially from an NL Central aspect.
Angelo, you were in attendance for the ALCS. What was more impressive to you, your team sweeping the New York Yankees out or watching San Francisco's comeback against St. Louis?
I mean, don't get me wrong, the Giants' comeback against St. Louis was pretty amazing and all, but I'm going to go with the Tigers sweeping the Yankees. I mean, first off, I'll start by saying that our starting pitchers set a new postseason record by not allowing a run in 30 and a third innings, and they did it against the Yankees, the $200 million Yankees. I understand that people want to say that the Yankees were playing bad, and ESPN wanted to say that the Yankees beat the Yankees, not the Tigers beat the Yankees. But the fact of the matter is, the Tigers played great. They shut the Yankees down. They did what they needed to do. And, Brian, you hit it on it right. They swept the Yankees without giving up the lead at all.
Yeah. It wasn't just that they swept the Yankees. The manner in which the Tigers did it was the most impressive to me. And the Giants, they like this thing where they like to be down, have their backs against the wall, a little bit nobody believing in us factor, and then they come back, even though I think a lot of people believe that they would come back in Game 7. Turning to the matchup here between the Tigers and the Giants, of course, getting home field advantage in this World Series as the National League won the All-Star game. Ironically, it was all the Giants that helped get them home field advantage. Matt Cain was the winning pitcher in the All-Star game. Melky Cabrera, though not on this World Series roster, was the All-Star game MVP. Buster Posey helped out. Pablo Sandoval had that triple that put the game out of reach. And it was Justin Verlander of the Tigers who started the All-Star game, gave up all the runs, in turn cost his own team home field advantage in the World Series. So Detroit starts on the road, games 1 and 2, games 3, 4, and 5 in Detroit, and then games 6 and 7. Of course, if necessary, games 5, 6, and 7 will be back in San Francisco. Pitching matchups are set for the first 4 games. It'll be Justin Verlander versus Barry Zito in game 1. Doug Fister versus Madison Bumgarner in Game 2. A surprise there, as Bumgarner was not involved in the Giants' comeback. He was taken out of the rotation. Game 3, Anibal Sanchez versus Ryan Vogelsong. Vogelsong has been fantastic for the Giants. And in a shock, Matt Cain will start Game 4 for the Giants against Max Scherzer, which is a little weird thinking that the Giants would not want to have Cain go games 3 and 7 after he won games 5 in the NLDS and game 7 in the NLCS. Guys, looking at the pitching matchups, do we think Bochy made the right moves in starting Bumgarner in game 2, sending Lincecum to the bullpen, and moving Matt Cain to game 4? Gonna start it off with KP.
I mean, I'm a little biased towards Madison Bumgarner just because I preseason picked him to at least be in contention for the Cy Young, and I think he has that capability. I mean, he was lights out in their run in 2010, and I don't see why he can't return to that. I know he's been a little off as of late. He's gotten pretty much lit up in the postseason, putting up a over 11 ERA in only 8 innings, but I think he can turn it around. I mean, he maybe needed a little time off, which he did get. He hasn't pitched in a while. And I think he can make it happen.
Brian, over to you. What are your thoughts on Bruce Bochy's moves for the World Series rotation?
Well, given that Lincecum has been very effective out of the pen this postseason, especially in that relief outing, and he hasn't been very good starting, hence the three games later he pitched and only lasted, what was it, an inning in the third or two innings or something. I think that was the right move, but moving Matt Cain back to game four is not. You're giving him his regular rest with an extra day, I believe, but it's the World Series. You don't want to put your guy who has been your best pitcher this postseason as your fourth guy because you're only getting one start out of him in the World Series. I would have pitched him two. You're still giving him what would it be, 3 or 4 days of rest? So I would have gone Matt Cain two, Bumgarner three, but I guess that's why he makes the big bucks and I talk on a podcast.
Jeremy, over to you. What are your thoughts on Bochy's moves?
There's a couple things. I think, first of all, I know he's announced, the order. I'm wondering if the Giants go down 2-0, will he stick to that or will Cain end up starting game three? That's something I wouldn't be surprised to see, especially at that point, being if they were down 2-0. And then that would allow them to bring him back for 6 or 7 if the series went that long. But as far as it stands now, I can't really agree with having Bumgarner pitch the second game. Vogelsong has been so good in the playoffs that you would think he would at least get a shot at game two, at home where he's more comfortable. He's been great at AT&T Park this whole season. I understand giving Bumgarner a spot in the rotation. I think Lincecum, like you said, Brian, has been great out of the pen, so keep him there. Bumgarner, you got to give him another chance just based on 2010. I mean, what he did in the postseason for them was incredible. And like KP said, I think he can bounce back and have some solid starts. The thing I kind of chuckled about it, I guess, when I saw the rotation announced was, not that obviously Zito had a great start against the Cardinals and has been pitching really well the second half of the season, but I wonder if there's any, deep dark spot in Bochy's brain that makes him think it's Verlander. We're not going to win anyway. Let's throw Zito out there. So I highly doubt he would say that or that he actually thought that, but it's interesting to think about. I mean, arguably the Giants' least accomplished pitcher versus Justin Verlander.
Yeah, but Zito did save the Giants' bacon in Game 5 of the NLCS. Angelo, over to you. What are your thoughts on the Giants' pitching rotation against your Tigers?
Well, because the Giants are in the National League, I don't get to see him as much, so I'm really basing this off of his stats and what I've seen this postseason and a little bit here and there and during the season and in their past careers. But I will say this. I don't doubt Bruce Bochy and his managerial skills. He's made, two World Series now on from the Giants, I believe. So here's the thing. You have Detroit, who's on a week-long layoff, and you're pitching Barry Zito in Game 1, who throws like a mid-80s fastball. There's no better way for a team to start hitting again than to hit up a soft pitcher. I'm not saying that his stuff isn't good, but he doesn't throw heat. The other thing is Jeremy, you're saying, why wouldn't you put in Vogelsong in game two instead of Bumgarner? Well, that would mean he'd be pitching on 3 days rest, and I don't think you really want to do that. I am shocked that he has Matt Cain pitching in game four and not 3 and 7, unless he plans on having him pitch 4 and 7 if there is a game seven in the first place anyway. I'm also shocked that we have Scherzer pitching game four and not game three to go 3 and 7, so that's besides the point. I don't know why they're pitching Bumgarner. I do agree that he had we all know that he had a great World Series in 2010, but he's been serving BP lately, and I'm not really sure. I guess Lincecum isn't the greatest of plays either there. And I guess was by putting Lincecum in the bullpen, you're going 2 lefties, 2 righties in the rotation. So I don't know. I think that I firmly believe that the Tigers have a huge advantage just based off that release right there of those starters.
Here's my theory about why Bochy did it. A, they said they think they figured out the problems that Bumgarner was having in the first two rounds of the playoffs. Zito pitched great. He's on regular rest. I agree. Lincecum has been better out of the bullpen. But would you rather have your two best pitchers going against Verlander and Pfister, or save in a National League park where the pitcher hits, or would you rather have your two best pitchers, which is Vogelsong and Kane, at least this postseason, on the road facing the Detroit lineup that is even stronger with a DH in it? I think that they're going to save those guys for those games. In Game 7, if they get to it, it's not going to be Vogelsong or Kane. You're going to get Vogelsong and Kane in that game. Game 7, if it happens, is going to be absolutely crazy. I think Leland and Bochy are going to pull out every stop. You'll see Vogelsong for 3 innings, Kane for 3 innings, 4 innings, until something happens. And bring in Lincecum and Romo and Affelt, and you see Verlander and Detroit. Oh, my God, it's going to be amazing. I can't wait. This thing's going 7. That's my prediction. But we'll get to other predictions soon. Going to go over to guys, who is your X factor for this 2012 World Series? We're going to start it off with Jeremy.
Well, mine's actually going to be a major player, possible MVP winner, Buster Posey for the Giants. Not because, you know, people, I mean, even despite his struggles in the postseason so far, you don't expect him to not make an impact, but that's exactly what's happened. I mean, aside from the grand slam against the Reds, he's been relatively quiet in the postseason. He's only hitting .211. He's got 4 hits total, 2 of those being home runs. And, you know, the Giants have still been able to win, which is amazing in itself. You know, largely in thanks to Marcus Scudero. He's been on fire in the postseason. Angel Pagan's been up and down, but getting on base in front of him. Pablo Sandoval's been hitting well. But, you know, if you add in, if Buster Posey breaks out of his slump in the World Series and starts raking again, this is a whole different Giants team, and it changes my personal prediction completely. You know, I'm sure that the Tigers pitchers are keying in on, obviously, every hitter in the lineup, but taking extra special care with Posey like everyone else has because he had such a great season. But, yeah, I mean, that's the reason he's my X factor, is if he gets going, this is a completely different series in my mind.
Angelo, over to you. Who is your X factor for this World Series?
I'm going to go with Johnny Peralta. The reason why I say this is because he did have an pretty outstanding series against the Yankees, something that he didn't really do much of the season. He was a outstanding shortstop in the ALCS. He was a very good shortstop during the season. He didn't really make too many errors. I want to say maybe 8 or 9 throughout the year. But people, the knock on him was his range. But he made more plays that seemed harder to get to and which is much more sound. On top of that, he hit the ball very, very well. He had two home runs in game 4. His averages was high for the series. So I think if he continues playing the way he did against the Yankees, I think the Tigers are going to have a lot of success.
Brian, over to you. Who is your X factor for this World Series?
Well, I'm going to go with a guy who, like Angelo said, may not even play, which, in fact, makes him an X factor, right? I'm going to go with Jose Valverde, the quintessential closer of the Tigers, and I put closer in quotation. I know Leland said he wants Valverde to be his closer in the very near future, but his last 2 outings this postseason, he gave up 7 earned runs in an inning and a third. Now, and mind you, one of those was game 1 against New York when he went into the 9th inning with a 4-run lead. It was 4-0, and he gave up 4 runs. Now, I honestly don't know if he pitches, but if he doesn't, what does that do for the back end of the Tigers' bullpen, knowing you don't have one of the most dominant closers in baseball over the last few years pitching? His stats for the regular season were he had 35 saves. He only blew 5 with a 3.78 ERA. This postseason, his ERA is like, it's 27. That's just not getting it done for a closer. Now, he may not pitch again, and if he does, it likely won't be in a close game. So how is Jim Leland going to work the back end of his bullpen if it becomes a safe situation without Valverde?
It'll be interesting to see what Leland does as Valverde, as you said, has blown up. They do have a lot of quality arms in that bullpen still of Octavio Dotel, Joaquin Benoit. Phil Koch, who has taken over the closer role, even Al Albuquerque, who can get a strikeout if necessary. KP, over to you. Who is your X factor for the 2012 World Series?
Now, this might be stating the obvious, but I definitely go with Marco Scudero. He's kind of been the unsung hero of the San Francisco Giants postseason and is definitely their, I mean, extreme X factor. He's come up with a lot of big hits, a lot of big plays. He's just been lights out. He's been 354 this whole postseason, which is the highest of the people left. Carlos Beltran was the only day-to-day player who was higher than him by 357. He was only three hundredths of a batting average higher. I mean, he's just been lights out. I mean, every time I turn on the TV and Marco Scudero's either on base or making a play at second or getting taken out by Matt Holliday or patting Matt Holliday on the back and saying it's not a big deal. But he's just been all over the TV. He's been all over the news. And I think if they kind of rally behind him and try to get Marco Scudero his World Series, I think that the Giants will ride and take it in six probably.
There's no hotter hitter coming into the World Series than Marco Scudero hitting .500 for the Giants in the NLCS, taking home NLCS MVP. Also became the first player in NLCS history to have six multi-hit games in one series. My X factor is Anibal Sanchez of the Detroit Tigers. He came over from the Miami Marlins at the trade deadline. He is 3-1 with a 1.98 ERA and a 0.88 WHIP in his career against the Giants. If he's going to go game three, he might end up going game seven as well for a few innings, at least until Leland comes to his senses and brings in Verlander out of the bullpen. But Anibal Sanchez knows these Giants hitters better than anybody in that Tigers pitching staff. He's going to need to step up and get them some information on how to handle these batters, and he handles them quite well. That brings us to prediction time. You can see my complete prediction and breakdown of this World Series. I break down every position on 3u3d.mlblogs.com. While I'm here, thank you guys for reading. We had our best day ever during Game 7 of the National League Championship Series. Hopefully we'll get some more love during the World Series. We're close to having our best month ever. My prediction on that blog, though I'm thinking about changing it because of what Bochy did with the rotation, but I'm going to stick with Giants in 7 after being down 2-0. They make a comeback and win in 7 in a complete all-out crazy game in Game 7. Going to go over to Angelo. Are you sticking with your preseason prediction?
Come on, really? Yes, I'm sticking with my preseason prediction. First of all, I'm going to start with just real quick. Game 1, Verlander going, you're right. He lost home field advantage for the Tigers in the All-Star game. I promise you, he gets home field advantage back for the Tigers, and they don't look back. If they win Game 2, fine. If they don't, it doesn't matter. The Tigers are winning in 5 games in front of their home crowd. Done deal.
All right. We expect a video of them celebrating if that happens with you in attendance.
You got it.
All right. Going to go over to KP, your prediction for the World Series.
I mean, mine's pretty straightforward. I think the Tigers probably get it done in 6. I don't think the Giants' magic can hold on for that long. The bats will probably go a little quiet. I mean, after watching MLB Network like all day today, I just watched the Tigers do some stuff. They did a bunch of simulated games, and it was kind of just good to see them not taking the days off and kind of just hanging out. But they were taking a lot of BP. They were swinging that live pitching. They were getting their pitchers out on the mound to throw to live batters. And I just think that they're going to bring a little more firepower on the pitching side. And, I mean, what pitching staff is hotter than the Giants right now? I mean, not the Giants, the Tigers right now.
Going to go over to Brian. What is your prediction for the World Series?
Well, I'm going to preface this by saying, does anybody remember the 2007 World Series and the playoffs leading up to it? That was the last time that a team had 11 days off before the World Series. We all remember Colorado got swept by Boston in that series. Now, I'm not saying the Tigers get swept. I actually think the Tigers win. But I think it's going to be a very close first two games because, I mean, yeah, the Tigers have seen live pitching, but they haven't seen live pitching in a game situation in 11 days, which is completely different if we all know that. So, but I think Verlander is going to handle San Francisco game one. I think Fister might lose game two, and I think the Tigers take it in six, but I don't think it's going to be as easy as everybody thinks.
It is an interesting theory that the Rockies had all that rest, got swept. The Tigers in 06 had all that rest and ended up losing in five games to the St. Louis Cardinals. Hopefully we'll see how the rest affects the Detroit Tigers this go around. Jeremy, over to you. Final predictions for the World Series.
Well, I've heard, on Twitter, through the media, whatever, that the Tigers did fly in instructional league players to scrimmage. I know that that's not the same as, facing a major league team, but it does get them in game situations, which I think was very smart of Leland given the off time. But yeah, as far as the matchup goes, I gotta give two wins to Verlander in the series. I don't want to say it's automatic, but he is so dominant, especially matching up against Zito in game one and whoever, later down the line, if it comes to that. But, I honestly think even though it will be starting in San Francisco, you have Verlander and Fister in matchups they should win on paper. I think they will win. I want to know who's going to get out Miguel Cabrera, honestly, on the Giants staff, especially in those first two games. And I think they'll come home and close it out before it even heads back for game six. I think they'll take it in five, like Angela said. I do think Kane will win his game four, make you guys wait a little bit longer for the celebration, but give you guys Verlander again in game five to lock it down.
All right, and there's no better big game pitcher, it seems, right now than Justin Verlander, with a 0.74 ERA thus far in this postseason. If the Tigers win, it'll be on the back of Justin Verlander. If the Tigers win, I think he'll be the World Series MVP. That's going to do it for the World Series talk. Going to move over to manager talk, where Ozzie Guillen gets fired today by the Miami Marlins. The Marlins finish in last place with just 69 wins this season after having the spending spree. They bring in Jose Reyes, they bring in Heath Bell, and they bring in Mark Burley, and it wasn't enough to get out of last place. Actually, they even dropped to last place with Ozzie Guillen. Of course, Ozzie had the controversy with the Fidel Castro comments that cost him a suspension of five games by the team earlier this year. Of course, playing in a place called Little Havana. The Marlins will still owe Ozzie Guillen the last 3 years on his contract of $7.5 million. My question to you guys, say your team had no manager right now, like Brian, Ron Washington retired, Jim Leland's gone, et cetera, et cetera. Would you want Ozzie Guillen as the manager of your team? He has a World Series ring in 05 with the White Sox, but he's a little bit of a loose cannon. Would you want him as the manager of your team? Gonna start it off with Brian.
No, I don't. My team faded as it was down the end of the season with a good manager like Ron Washington, who backs only his players, whereas a guy like Ozzie Guillen, I don't see him taking anybody's side on his team. I guess he does behind closed doors, but in the media, he bashes his players. And I don't think that's the way to handle a situation like that. So I don't want him managing the Rangers.
Jeremy, over to you. Don Mattingly's gone. Would you want Ozzie Guillen as the manager of the Dodgers?
No, not at all. I thought that was a mistake to hire him. Same with Bobby V at the beginning of the year. I don't think those are guys that, should be leading clubs that are looking to, kind of rebuild and whatnot. Those are guys that seem to come in and kind of add fire to a team that's already good. I don't know. I never thought they would fit. They clearly didn't. And in my opinion, honestly, Ozzie has basically been, you know, riding since 2005, just cruising on the fact that they won the World Series, and spent most of his time, it seems, just mouthing off. And, you know, he's that kind of clubhouse cancer kind of manager that you don't want around. It seems that he draws more attention to himself through the media than, you know, his team playing, whether it's good or bad on the field. So, yeah, I definitely wouldn't want him managing the Dodgers.
All right, Angelo, let me paint the scenario. Detroit wins the World Series. Jim Leland says, I've had enough. I'm old. I'm going to go retire. Would you open your arms to Ozzie Guillen as the manager of the Detroit Tigers?
No, thanks. I'm good. I don't want him as a manager of the Tigers. Not that I don't find entertainment in the way he manages. I just don't find entertainment in the way he manages for my team. I mean, he seems like a decent guy. I watched a little bit of the franchise and kind of got to see a little bit more of the lighter side, I guess, of Ozzie Guillen, but I wouldn't want him at the helm of my team.
All right, KP, last thoughts on Ozzie Guillen. If Ron Renneke was gone, would you want Ozzie Guillen as the manager of the Brewers?
I don't even think that this is like a question for the Brewers organization, knowing what I know about Mark Attanasio, the owner, and just our organization as a whole. We don't tolerate much, like, I don't know, hijinks and the whole media attention of everything. It's just kind of not the Brewers way, just like how we try to keep the riffraff, like, out, aside from the fact that we have Nigel Morgan, I guess. But especially from a manager, he's just supposed to be there managing the team, keeping a level head, and not trying to be too much of a show. So I don't think that Ozzie Guillen would be a fit, especially for the Brewers.
The Brewers are very anti-tomfoolery, it sounds like, KP.
Aside from every once in a while in center field, yes.
All right. One place that Ozzie Guillen could end up is north of the border as the Toronto Blue Jays trade their manager, John Farrell, to the Boston Red Sox, who needed a new skipper after firing Bobby Valentine that we discussed on the last podcast. The Red Sox send over infielder Mike Viles, who's a very serviceable player, plus reliever David Carpenter. Guys, the Blue Jays finished in second to last place in the AL East, just ahead of the Boston Red Sox in 2012. Was dealing for a manager the right move? We've seen these moves not pan out. We saw Lou Piniella get traded to the Rays, never have a winning season in Tampa. We saw Ozzie Guillen get traded to the Miami Marlins in the offseason from the White Sox. That didn't work out. He's already fired. What are your thoughts, A, on John Farrell becoming the manager of the Red Sox, and B, should teams trade players for managers? Going to start it off with Jeremy.
Yeah, I think he is the right fit, first of all. I mean, first of all, anything's better than Bobby V, except for Ozzie Guillen. You know, that was not the right fit for them. They need someone who is a more, you know, professional kind of manager, a guy that it can relate to his players better, kind of like Terry Francona was before everything went down in flames a couple years ago. But yeah, you know, I think that Farrell has a reputation for being, you know, a more, for lack of better terms, a more modest, you know, kind of relatable manager than these other guys that have been swirling around. So definitely like the play by them. I'm not sure if they'll regret giving up Avilas or not. I think he's a really underrated utility player. And as far as that goes, it always seems weird to me. I remember reacting strangely when I saw that they traded players for Farrell. I thought that was strange, and you know, it's been done before. It used to be done a lot back in the day, but I always find that weird kind of in modern day baseball to see that happen. I think it's fine that it does happen. Definitely something that's hard for someone like me to get used to just because we don't see it a lot in our lifetimes, but I don't have any problem with it personally.
I do kind of find it kind of funny that the Red Sox actually gave up more to get John Farrell as manager than they got in basically letting Theo Epstein go to the Chicago Cubs. Angelo, over to you. What are your thoughts on John Farrell as the new manager of the Red Sox?
I think it's a pretty good move for him. I mean, he knows the division really well, I would say. So that's a plus for Boston. Instead of bringing in someone, let's just say, like Isaac Guillen, for the sake of arguing, I think it's a good move. It's a, you know, fresh new face. I think a guy that has or will have a little more control over his players than Bobby V showed, but I guess it's his on if the, you know, if he earns the players' respect. So I think it's an all right move. Hello?
Yeah. Shoot, I forgot to unmute my microphone. Sorry. You guys have me, like, all worried about Cosmos, so I'm actually remembering to mute my microphone. And
did you guys get mine?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we
got it. Yeah, we got you. You didn't get me. All right. That'll do it for our manager talk this week. We'll see if there are a few more firings and hirings in the coming weeks. The Blue Jays still need to bring in a new manager, and now the Marlins do as well. Going to go over to surgery talk. And a lot of off-season surgeries already happening to get players ready by spring training, including a lot of big names. But it's just not surgeries if we don't start with this week in Tommy John. And it's a former Brewer, KP, getting a little nostalgic here. What is the big player in this week in Tommy John?
I'd say not too nostalgic because most of his starts ended with a lot of home runs for the other team and a lot of L's being put on the board. But it is our former pitcher and Jeremy's team's former pitcher, Randy Wolf, who's getting his Tommy John surgery. I guess not surprising after the way he went out when he pitched for the Orioles. He tweaked it, went on the DL right at the end of the season, so and it with some elbow soreness. So I guess it wasn't a complete shock to see that he has it now, but I also wouldn't be surprised if, I don't know, if he, I don't want to say retires because otherwise why would he be doing it as maybe just for comfort, but I just don't see him posting many good starts or coming out of relief, and it's just not his style, so we'll see what happens when the season comes around or how the surgery ends up.
All right, Angelo, over to you. AL Central off-season surgeries. Go!
I've got Paul Konerko, who just had a little cleanup on his left wrist that he just kind of put off till the end of the year. Should be good to go come spring training. And Matt LaPorta, who had some arthroscopic hip surgery, but saying that he's going to need 3 to 4 months to recover, which means he might miss part of spring training. If that's the case, LaPorta is out of options, and in order for him to stay with the club, he'll need to make the 25-man roster out of spring training. Otherwise, he will be put on waivers, so he might not be an Indian in the near future.
All right, going to go over to Brian. AL West off-season surgeries. Go!
Oh, no, Albert Pujols had surgery on his knee. No, it's not that bad. It's just a arthroscopic cleanup, is what they said, considered minor. I guess he had it, what, a couple days ago? And he's already started rehabbing it, so he'll be fine by the start of spring training. Now, another guy to worry about, though, is his teammate, C.J. Wilson, who is having a problem he has had in the past. In 2008, he had to have bone spurs affected his delivery, and he was taken out of the bullpen for that. But he just recently had surgery to remove the bone spurs out of his left elbow, which could be reason as to why he was not very good down the stretch. He said he'd been feeling pain since the All-Star break. So there's that. And then if you guys remember, Mike Adams, he was so dominant for most of the season. Then just all of a sudden, the end of the season, the last week and a half of the season, he couldn't keep guys from hitting home runs off of him. He gave up one all season until that his last outing in which he gave up 3 in 4 batters. And he has been diagnosed with thoracic outlet syndrome, which, if you don't know what it is, I'm not a doctor, but it's basically a numbing sensation in the hand, which is caused by your ribs pushing up against a nerve in your shoulder. I don't know. Rangers have had history with this. Matt Harrison actually had to have a rib removed in 2009 to stop the bone from pressing up against the nerve. So he should be fine. It happens all the time. I mean, they had another guy last year who had it done. I think Darren O'Day had to have thoracic outlet syndrome before his back started acting up. So he should be fine by start of spring training.
All right, going to go over to the NL West now. And, Jeremy, a couple of your Dodgers getting off-season surgery already. Go!
All righty. Yeah, we had a trio of Dodgers getting some surgery right off the bat in off-season. We all know about Matt Kemp. He had his shoulder worked on. He's starting recovery. He actually tweeted that he was flying down to Arizona today to start rehab and everything. AJ Ellis had to get the meniscus repaired in his left knee. He should be, I mean, you know, he'll be resting up and recovering for a little while, but he'll be fine for spring training. And Kenley Jansen finally got his heart condition that had been bothering him the last two seasons, on and off. He finally got that operated on and got that problem solved, so that shouldn't be an issue anymore. I think it said out 3 months or so, so he should be ready to resume throwing just about his normal time frame anyway. And last one, the Padres, Carlos Quentin, you know, he had been off and on the DL all year. He had knee issues and kept bothering him, so he just up and got it worked on right after the season, and I guess he's already on the road to recovery as well. So nothing pressing in the NL West, just a bunch of guys starting rehab and getting ready for spring training already.
All right, and I will close it with the Eastern Divisions. A lot of big names that needed surgery already. We talked about Derek Jeter's fractured ankle on the last podcast we did that occurred in game one of the ALCS. He is electing to get surgery on that fractured ankle. It'll be a 3 to 4 month recovery time. He looks to be ready for the start of the season. Another big offseason injury, which possibly the most impressive injury of the entire season. R.A. Dickey had an abdominal tear in his stomach the entire season, still pitched fantastic, still put Cy Young caliber baseball. He gets surgery on that abdomen, actually tweeted that everything went well. He will be ready for the start of the 2013 season, but one player in the NL East might not be ready for spring training and the start of 2013, Brian McCann, the catcher for the Atlanta Braves, right shoulder surgery on a torn labrum. He has a 4 to 6 month recovery time frame. For the Braves, this is a little worrisome here as they have until 3 days after the World Series on whether to decide to pick up a $12 million option on Brian McCann or if they will work out a long-term deal before that. Big decisions to be made. Luckily, the Braves do have, in my opinion, the best backup catcher in baseball in David Ross. If they need to go with Ross for the first couple months of next season until McCann is perfectly okay, but that shoulder gave him a lot of problems. McCann statistically had his worst season of his career. See if getting the surgery will help him bounce back in 2013. Speaking of last week's podcast, we talked about Jeter. We also had Defend Yourself. And this week, we're going to make these guys defend their Manager of the Year picks. Once again, you can find those on our blog, 3u3d.mlblogs.com. And we're going to start it off in the National League. Jeremy, Clint Hurdle second, Don Mattingly third. Did not appear on any other ballot of the four of us. Defend yourself.
Well, Mates, I was looking forward to this this section just to hear you say defend yourself over and over again. It's one of my favorite things on the whole podcast. But given that, you know, all five of us picked David Johnson, unanimous selection for NL Manager of the Year, you know, I think everyone knows that he is the likely winner here. The reason for Hurdle and Mattingly, you know, there were a number of candidates, and I think they all got covered at some point among our votes. You know, Dusty Baker, Freddy Gonzalez, Matheny, Bruce Bochy, you know, all these guys really really had great seasons, I mean, to be honest. But you know, the reason I did give a vote to Hurdle is because even though the Pirates failed to make it to 500, the fact that they were so close, I mean, you know, you could argue for any number of these guys, but again, you know, what he did with a team that, yeah, they had a good A.J. Burnett for a long time. They had a good James McDonald in the first half. They had another MVP candidate in Andrew McCutchen. But a lot of the players on that team, you know, still remain relatively anonymous, and he still kept them so close. I know they free fell at the very end there, but he was, what, two or three games under 500, I think, by the end of the year, especially. And even with the pitching staff, their ERA jumped almost a full run in the second half, and they still were very close to doing something that Pirates fans have been thirsting for you know, decades now. So that alone earned him a vote for me. Mattingly, a lot of people scoffed at. I wrote about that on a separate blog as well and got a lot of flack for it. And the reason there, aside from him being my guy, is that, you know, he did get all those All-Stars at the end of July and into August. They made those trades. They got Handler, Ramirez, Adrian Gonzalez, all the big names, added all that payroll, did all that stuff. And I think that a lot of people, when looking at the voting and, you know, making Mattingly's case as a manager, only focus on that section of the season. But the fact that they were even in contention before that is ridiculous, because Kemp was hurt for so long. Ethier went down for a while. D. Gordon was out forever. You know, Jerry Hurston Jr. went out. Their lineup for a few weeks there in the middle of the season was honestly AAA players, you know, role players. It was ridiculous. It looked like a AAA lineup. I'm not even kidding. And, you know, the fact that the Dodgers got off to such a hot start and were able to at least carry some of that momentum all the way into the pennant race, and then he got all these new faces, helped them mesh to get within two games of making the wild card, I think that was definitely worthy of a vote. I think he's getting a lot of crap for doing a great job this year with what he was given.
All right, going to go over to Angelo. Your National League ballot, you have Mike Matheny, second of the St. Louis Cardinals. He inherits a team that went to the World Series, won the World Series last season, finishes in the second wild card spot this season as a rookie manager. You are the highest on him at second place. He did get one third place ballot from Brian. Defend yourself on Mike Matheny.
Okay, well, I will start by saying losing Albert Pujols, arguably the best hitter in that lineup last year, at least the most feared, is a huge loss. I know he got them into just a wild, like I'll say this, just a wild card spot, but also led them, and I know we did this prediction beforehand, but he continued to lead the team into the NLCS. But he's a first-year manager, too, and I think he did a really good job keeping the team pretty much on pace and in the right mindset that, hey, you can lose a big star, but you can still go out and win this thing. So he got a good vote from me.
I mean, he did get his team to the NLCS, but let's be honest. He got lucky in the wild card game. His team blew the lead in the NLDS and needed a miraculous comeback in the ninth inning down 6-0. Nothing that he did. He blew the lead 3-1 in the NLCS. Maybe Mike Matheny's not as good as we think he is. Okay, I'm just a bitter Braves fan. I'm sorry. I'll apologize, Mike Matheny. You're good with me. Very good rookie season out of you, which means it's time for me to defend myself. And I gave Gonzalez my second place vote for NL Manager of the Year behind Davey Johnson, and my reasoning is this. Freddy Gonzalez, they had that collapse in 2011, and they could have just pulled what the Red Sox did, completely collapse and tank this season and finish in last place. Freddy, along probably with the help of Chipper Jones, got the team back in order. He got smarter in saving the bullpen. He got smarter with that rotation. Got smarter moving Chris Medlin into the rotation. That I think that he did an adequate job and getting that team to the first wild card spot in which that they had a chance to advance in the playoffs He did everything they could for that team. Going to move to the American League side, and these guys are already chomping at the bit where they need to defend themselves. So we're going to start it off with Brian. Robin Ventura appeared on third place on your ballots, along with Angelo and Jeremy. Brian, you get the easy one. Your ballot was pretty solid. Not going to lie. But Robin Ventura in third place over a couple other managers. Defend yourself on that.
Well, I'd like to say that I finally have something that was pretty solid that I had to put on to actually typing it out. So I'm going to relish in this for a second. But the reason I had to pick Robin Ventura third and at third and not as I wanted to put him at first or second was because his team failed. And, Mapes, I'm going to need you to pull up the stats of our over-unders because I believe we all took the White Sox under. We all.
That is, you are correct on that, sir. Okay. We all took the White Sox under. We hated them.
We all took them under, and yet they led the AL Central for much of the season. And they really didn't have much player turnover. It was almost the same team they had last year. So was it the manager? I don't know. All we can say is probably he had an excellent rookie season. So, I mean, I don't know how I had to put him at third only because his team wilted down the end of the season.
All right. And the last, KP. I've been saving this one. You are the only one out of all of us to put Buck Showalter over Bob Melvin as the AL Manager of the Year. Plus, you give Mike Socha a third-place vote after what the Angels failed with Pujols and that rotation and Mike Trout dominating. He didn't even get them to the playoffs, but he was the third-best manager to you this season. Buck Showalter and Mike Socha. KP, defend yourself.
I think that Buck Showalter was the obvious choice because the Orioles haven't been to the playoffs in forever. I mean, just taking that team of somewhat no-names, I mean, Adam Jones, J.J. Hardy was a big aspect of it, Manny Machado coming up in the middle of the season. I mean, they haven't been to the playoffs since 1997, and what Buck Showalter did come in, not come in, but take them all the way to the postseason for the first time, giving Baltimore a little rejuvenation. And I kind of hope to see them be a little more of a fighting force in the AL East now, as opposed to just the Yankees and the, well, collapsing Red Sox, I guess. And as for Mike Socha, I just think that he took a lot of heat for the fact that his players didn't necessarily perform for him, which I guess I had a little pity for, and I gave him a little third place vote. Just because a lot of people probably got a little mad at Mike Socha for not making the playoffs. Understandable. They brought in a lot of firepower, and they didn't make the playoffs. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a big Angels fan, I guess. But that's about that.
You have defended yourself.
Yeah.
You are still penalized for Mike Socha.
Okay.
Go change it to somebody. Somebody else. Ventura, Madden, not Bobby Valentine.
Not Bobby Valentine.
You get half credit.
Okay, that's fine.
Mercy on your soul. But that's going to do it for Defend Yourself. We also want to send out congratulations to Fernando Rodney of the Tampa Bay Rays and Buster Posey of the San Francisco Giants. Well, Jeremy might not want to send congratulations to Buster Posey because he strongly dislikes the Giants. But still, congratulations to them.
They should have gotten out of the way, that guy.
They were awarded the American League and National League Comeback Players of the Year. The San Diego Padres announced this week that they will be moving in the fences at Petco Park in 2013. Petco Park, of course, notoriously one of the best pitcher's parks in baseball. Among the moving in the fences, they will move in the right field porch, 11 feet from 402 in right center to 391, down the right field line all the way from 375 into 364 and 360 to 349, out in left center from the deepest part of left center by the Padres bullpen at 402 feet away. That'll be moved into a straight line from 383 to 397, and when news happens with the Padres, especially news like this that'll affect the pitchers, we have to turn and welcome back to the podcast senior San Diego correspondent pitcher for the San Diego Padres, Mr. Anthony Bass, coming back to 3U3D, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm back.
Anthony, when you heard the news about the fences being moved in, did you throw things? Did you get angry? What are your thoughts on them moving in the fences?
Yeah, I was like, what's going on? I thought I was supposed to have an advantage here, but I guess not anymore. No, it's good, though, because I know the fans, they come to see... They come to see home runs. They come to see action. They want to see our team scoring runs. Right field at our place, if you've ever been there, it's a graveyard, especially at nighttime when that marine layer heads on in. I think the move's going to make it definitely more fair. But obviously, as a pitcher, you make pitches, you execute a game plan. It doesn't matter. You'll get guys out. But I think the move definitely is probably a good thing for the fans.
Cool. So what are your plans this offseason as far as, like, working out goes and getting some R&R in and looking ahead to next season?
As of right now, plan on picking up baseball come January 1st. That's usually what I like to do, let my arm rest, recover, and then begin my workouts come November 1st, start my weight training, cardio, and getting ready for baseball season in February. Besides that, a lot of rest, a lot of sleep, and a lot of eating of food to help put on some pounds, because I know I'm going to be losing it during the season. So it's kind of what I do, is I try to fatten up in the off season, so when I lose it in the regular season, I don't feel too weak.
All right, sounds like a pretty good plan. Okay, so the awards are coming up soon, and you've got a third baseman on your team by the name of Chase Headley, who just mashed in the second half of the season. What are your thoughts on Chase going up against, say, David Wright for a Silver Slugger Award?
Obviously, I have Chase's back as his teammate. I'd love to see him, get an award like that. But I don't think his average was good enough to win the Silver Slugger Award. So I don't see him winning that. But I'd say, you know, that move with the fences is definitely going to help out Chase a lot. I saw him turn on some baseballs to right field as a switch hitter and really connect and usually flew out to the warning track. And I think that move is going to help him out with his average-wise speaking. I think he'll hit 300 next year for sure, which should put him in the running for a Silver Slugger potentially. But this year, I think David Wright will probably take that home.
All right, sounds good, Anthony. You got hometown team versus divisional foe going in the World Series, Zito Buss pitching in the first game. Give me the World Series breakdown.
All right. I know Verlander's going for the Tigers game one against Zito. Obviously, the upper hand has to go to, reigning MVP Cy Young of the AL, you know, Verlander. I see him, you know, Tigers getting that game one. After that, I think you have Bumgarner going game two for the Giants. I'm not sure who the Tigers have going, but I do know who the Giants have because I just checked that out today.
Well, the Tigers have Verlander followed by Pfister, and they've got Sanchez followed by Scherzer. That's the preliminary indication right now.
Okay, got it. I know Bumgarner's going game two versus Pfister. That's a pretty even matchup. I think Bumgarner is more of a strikeout pitcher than Pfister. Pfister's more of a ground ball pitcher, keeps the ball in the yard for the most part. But he's pitching in big games, too. They both have. It's a toss-up game, too. I see the series as a whole going to six games. But I have to give the upper hand to AL champions, Tigers, right now. They're just... They have the best pitcher in the game. They got the best hitter in the game, Miguel Cabrera. That's a tough combo to defeat. But you never know. It's baseball. It's a fun, crazy game, as you all know. And it's just fun to watch, like an underdog team. Not really an underdog team, but the Giants are probably not expected to win the World Series going into it. But I wouldn't be surprised if they give Tigers a handful.
All right, we'll get you out on this question. we went to Petco Park, and when Dale Thayer came in for the save, he got these crazy fireball pyrotechnics. You have one career save, but unfortunately it was on the road. If you had been at Petco and came in for the save, would they have given you the fireballs too? And how do I get fireballs for myself?
Yeah, usually that happens when you get the save, when you come in and shut the door. That'd be pretty cool. Experience the flames. Hopefully I can feel them out in the mound when I'm pitching. I heard that it gets pretty hot. I could feel them in the bullpen after the game. But on a side note, it was still a lot of fun to get my first save in Arizona, you know, against the D-backs. That was a big situation. Carried that momentum into our next series, and something I'll never forget.
Could we expect more Anthony Bass out of the bullpen, or are you going to try and stick into the rotation for next season?
I love to start. That's where I feel comfortable. That's where I want to be. Obviously, whatever the organization wants me to do, start or leave. As long as I'm pitching in the big leagues, I'm fine with it. I'm going to help out the team, do my best. But my mindset, the way I approach my game, how I go over my scouting reports, like everything's lined up to be a starter for me. That's where I feel locked in. But whatever they want to do with me, it's kind of like been that way the past year and a half. I just go with it.
Good deal. Hey, Anthony, one more thing about Petco. It looks like they finally got it right. They're moving the visitor's bullpen away from the foul line and then putting it behind your bullpen or the home bullpen.
That's right. Yeah, they're doing that. I saw that, too. That'll be nice for the visiting team. Kind of like AT&T Park, it almost seemed like they forgot to put it in the visiting bullpen, and it's good to see them, you know, put a bullpen up. I thought they were going to do it in right field as they're bringing in the fences 11 feet, but I guess they're going to put it behind ours, which is good. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. I actually kind of felt like it was an advantage towards us because we could go underneath and kind of, like, be in the shade and where it's kind of cooler during day games, and the visiting bullpen had to wear it in the sun. So I kind of like that advantage, but it doesn't matter.
Cool, Anthony. Well, as always, we appreciate you coming on. Best of luck in this offseason, and hopefully we can get a report from you during spring training before the season actually starts when we get back in full force.
That's right, man. I appreciate it. You guys have a good night.
You too, Anthony. Thanks. Thanks again to San Diego Padres pitcher Anthony Bass for joining us once again on 3U3D. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. It's at AnthonyBass45. And while you're there, you can follow us on Twitter at 3U3D. Like us on Facebook. It's 3UP, 3DOWN, all words, no numbers. Check out the blog, 3U3D.mlblogs.com, as we are on our pursuit for the top 10. I am hopeful that we might even make top 5. I got a good feeling about this month, looking for our first 7,000 view month in the history of the 3U3D blog. And if you'd like to email us, it's 3U3DBaseball@gmail.com. And for Jeremy Dorn, for Kurt Peter, for Brian Boynton, for Angelo Felicia, who's still sitting there grinning about his Detroit Tigers, and for Anthony Bass, I am merely your host, Brian Mapes. I'm sorry we ran out of time. We will get to Eddie Mata the next time.